Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
No, it definitely was a great show. And for the listeners, this is Sarah Hartshorn. Is that how you say your name? Hartshorn?
Hartshorn.
Hartshorn.
Wait. Yeah, like if a heart had a horn.
Hartshorn. Oh, okay, perfect. Yeah. Names are hard for me, but thank you so much for doing the podcast. I thought it'd be fun to have you on because yesterday, obviously, you are having a baby, your first baby.
Yeah, first baby.
Yeah.
And then when we were talking yesterday, I was like, oh my God, how does it feel to grow a baby? And that's like something that I think about a lot because like I'm pushing 32 and not that I know that's still young, but it's still like in the relative what maybe like 6 to 8 years maybe before.
Yeah, that's 32 I think is when I really was like, oh, I always thought I didn't want kids, never wanted them. And then I turned 30 and everyone was like, you're going to change your mind because you're 30 now. And I was like, nope, still haven't. And then 32, I was like, oh no, I did change my mind. They were right.
I was the exact same. I've kind of never really wanted kids, not like since I moved to America. So not in, let's say, the last, so I've been here 7 years and it's only in the last year that I'm really thinking about it. But it's also the first time I've been in like a healthy relationship and I've gone to therapy, so I've dealt with any like family issues.
Which is so clutch. I'm so glad I did wait, even though there was never really a risk of me doing it earlier because I thought I didn't want kids, but I like that's fully why I was like, oh no, maybe I could do this. It's because yeah, I was in therapy, my husband was in therapy, like we sorted a lot out. And yeah, it's like I don't know. I feel like you should have to take a test to have a kid.
But absolutely.
You definitely don't.
But if you had to take a test, I wouldn't exist. So
me neither. Absolutely not. Yeah. Fully. 100%. That's true. Yeah.
And like, I'm glad I exist, but also, yeah, I wish not even maybe. Yeah. I wish they would take a test. Okay. So when they find out you're pregnant and they have to test the husband and the mother, like a psychiatric evaluation, and then they could be like, oh, you need pills, or oh, you need therapy. And you know, then that way, like they have to do that as they're having a kid. There's like a government follow-up. That dictatorship exactly. I can get on board with
100%. No, if I could rule with an iron fist, that would definitely be my thing.
Yeah, if you could, I'm just going to tie up my hair while we're doing this. If you could rule with an iron fist, it's like, well, I'd be a good ruler. Okay.
Right. I would do it right. Yeah, exactly. Do I have any qualifications? No. Do I really understand most of what's going on in the world? Absolutely not. But I could do it. I don't know.
I need to cut my hair. It's so heavy. It's like giving me like headaches. You know, I tried to tie it up there.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh no, this is going to hurt for the whole podcast. Yeah. But yeah,
well,
no.
It feels so good when you take your hair down at the end of the day and you're like, oh, that's what that was.
It's wild. It's like, I think I'm like going to give myself a receding hairline, more of a one than I already have. But yeah, no. As soon as I get pregnant, I'm chopping my hair off. I'm like, okay, it's done now.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I've had so many hair lengths and hair things that I'm into the long hair for now, but who knows? I don't know. Maybe the kid will pull on it enough that I'll be like, nope, fuck it. Cut it off.
And so this is your, was there any things that you like, did you know you were going to like, this was a plan. You're like, okay, I'm going to get pregnant.
It was a plan. It totally was a plan. We've been talking about it for a long time. I'm not 32 anymore. I'm older than that. So like we've had we've had some time to talk about it, but we did get pregnant the first try, which I just didn't think we would. Cause also I've had one pregnancy scare in what, almost 20 years of fucking. And I'm not that smart. Like, I'm not smart enough that I've always been careful. Like, so I was like, it's going to be hard. Like it's going to take a while for sure. Also, I think we put so much pressure and we have so much like societal hangups around the age 35, which I haven't hit yet, but like, we're like, oh, if you're close to 35, it's going to be hard. Nope. Knocked up immediately.
That's so funny. Cause I always feel like that too, that I feel like, oh, maybe I'm not super fertile because I had some risks when I would have been my most fertile, you know, younger first sexual experiences, mm-hmm. and yeah, nothing. So that is good to hear.
Yeah. But also the 35 age, the reason that we even have that in our heads at all, like medically, culturally, is based on a 600-year-old study of French farmers.
That doesn't even make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. It's so arbitrary. It really is. And not that your fertility doesn't go down as you get older, not that there aren't like issues, but the 35 specific age is so outdated and so random and so old. So it's really not like, it's not a cutoff point at all, but it was a plan. And it's weird because I did start to think around 32, like, I think maybe I really do want kids. And it was because I was like, I think I might regret it if I don't. And I'd always known what it looked like to have a kid and regret it. There's a lot of women in my family that I think would never say it, but regret having kids. I don't want to say including my mom, but like, she did have a hysterectomy immediately after I was born. She was like, absolutely not, never doing that again. So I think, yeah, I knew what that looked like. And I didn't know what it looked like to like regret not having kids because, you know, I just didn't have that model. And then I was like, okay, I had to like work through like, okay, I think for me personally, I would regret not having them.
I also think it's the first generation of women who really have had a choice. I think for a lot of women, maybe even just to 15 years ago, like who are just 15 years older than us. Yeah. It was kind of what was done. It was always like you get married and have kids. So yeah, it's like the first really time. So I'm sure a lot of women who had kids regretted it just because they didn't really have the choice.
Yeah. And even if they would do it again, that doesn't mean that they still don't regret sort of doing it for the wrong reasons and at the wrong time. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure that my mom would have me again, but I think she would want to, or she would have kids again, but I think she would just want to do it real. I don't know if she'd want to get knocked up by her roommate and then marry him.
Oh yeah. 100%. And as well, I'm probably in a time now where men are stepping up to the plate more as well. So it's easier. Like, I know if I stay with my boyfriend and which I obviously hope we do, and we have a kid, he's, you know, he's great. He's not like, patriarchal. Whatever. Yeah. He's very, so he'd be like, I know for a fact, probably doing like 70% of the work.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I don't know. It's funny. My husband and I have come so far in like doing, like being equal in labor, but it is still so hard to like measure and gauge, like, because there's still so much expectation. Like I still do shitty things where like I will clean something that he doesn't clean and then I'll like resent him for it. And it's like, okay, well, that's not him. That's not his fault. You can't blame him for like, that's all within me. And like, I put so much pressure on myself where I'm like, oh, the apartment has to be clean all the time. And it's like that pressure isn't coming from him. That pressure is coming from like what I was raised with. It's such a process to like get to an equal foothold. Even now, like, I think we're so like, oh, it's 2022. I almost said 2020. Like, it's 2022. Everything's equal now, but it still has a foothold, man. Like, that stuff is still like worms in our brain where you just sort of assume that the moms are going to do everything.
I like as well how you said that from your perspective of it's like trained in your brain to be like, I'm the woman, I do this. And then you're like, oh, but wait, why did I do that? And so being annoyed. As well, for a lot of men, it takes a relearning of like, oh, the woman shouldn't be expected, you know, to do certain things. So I do think, yeah, I think, yeah, it's like passed on. What's that word? Like just generational.
Yeah. I don't know if that counts as generational trauma. Like that's a big word. Like people throw the word trauma around real fast and loose.
Generational roles or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also like, I don't know, when my husband and I started like, you know, working on our relation, we both had like been working on ourselves separately, but then that also we were like working on ways to apply that to our relationship. I've been in therapy for longer than he has. And so I was like, he's just going to have to do so much work. And then I was like, wait, what do you mean I do too? Like I have to, no, he just has to, he just has to clean more, right? That's it. And then it's like, no, bitch, you gotta, like, you have to work on yourself. You have to work. And I was like, oh, that sucks. that's work. I'm tired.
Yeah. And as well, like learning to like ask for what you need as well. And I think like, especially I remember one time someone gave out about someone leaving the toilet seat up. I can't remember what the situation was, but this stuck with me what she said. She was like, I never understood why women would get so mad about that, because it's like, well, we need it down, but they need it up. And it's like, we can just put it up or put it down. Like we don't need to.
Yeah.
She's like, and that is like it's a funny thing where you'll see it on TikToks and like, oh, he leaves the toilet seat up. And it's like,
yeah,
just put it down. I'm not, it's not like.
I did fall into the toilet one night though. And then okay. I do see that. I was like, that is annoying.
Fall into the toilet seat as well, but I do remember now if like Leland leaves it up, not to be like, hey, you know, or like not to make it into a big deal, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I don't know. It also, it helps that we have cats, one of whom loves to sit and stare into the toilet bowl for up to 8 hours a day. There's something wrong with him. Like he's the weirdest cat. And so we sort of have to keep it closed, because otherwise he will just sit there like with his paw in the water and it's gross.
And then come up and paw your face. Like, I love you.
Yes. Like, I love you. And you're like, you're so weird. You're so hours. He will spend hours just staring into the toilet bowl. It's so weird. I don't know if that's a thing. I've never seen another cat do that, but maybe it's a cat thing. I don't know.
But what, so how did it feel having like a person growing in you? Does it really feel like, I know like 50% of the population do it, but I'm just like so amazed by it. I just think,
I know, it's so weird. It's like it's the most like special, unique, wonderful, and also totally universal and like shared experience ever. I read in a book somewhere, one of the books I was reading while pregnant, that pregnancy connects you to so many people, including like your past and future selves in all these really weird ways. And that is very much true. It feels like you're connected to this just bigger thing, like, and all of your experiences that feel so weird. Like my first trimester was so weird and so rough, because you can't tell people, you don't tell people that you're pregnant. So you're just walking around being like, I got a nosebleed this morning because a guy came in me. You just like have to like process that information all by yourself. And you're like, why? Like, why would it cause nosebleeds? That doesn't make any sense to me. And like, yeah, like nosebleeds, headaches, my ears hurt. And it's just all these weird symptoms, and you're like, and then you find any sort of community or anyone who's done it before, and you talk to them and they're like, oh yeah, that happens. And you're like, and we're just cool with it.
Yeah, it's like
walk around.
And as well, it seems to be that people don't really know the symptoms before. Like I did not know nosebleeds was I only found out recently that women like shite while they give birth, which is totally fine. And that totally makes sense.
Yeah.
But the fact
sometimes.
That. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's probably more popular or more common than not. But all of these things we should know as women. Again, back to the class of if you're going to have a baby, you should go through these. Also, for women, we should have like a separate class for like, or maybe men too. I just don't really understand it all.
Yeah. It's just so weird. And it is, although at the same time, part of me was like, why did no one tell me this? But then also there's just so much to tell that like, I never even thought to look into it until I was pregnant. You know what I mean? Like, and there's, everyone talks about the morning sickness, I think, because that's one that you kind of would struggle to hide more. Like if you're just throwing up, like I just threw up on the street, didn't even break stride, just kept walking.
Like, oh no, I hate vomiting. That's my biggest
I do too. I have a wicked thing about it, and pregnancy has broken me of that. I really, I'm like, okay, it's fine. It happened because it's different. It's different than any other vomit you'll ever do in your life. That sounds so weird.
Why does the baby make you vomit?
Is it they actually don't know. They don't know. They think it's hormones, but most of morning sickness isn't vomiting, and it isn't that type of knot. It's like it, most of morning sickness is, you know, when you don't eat and your stomach starts to cramp.
Yeah.
That happens 10 times more when you're pregnant. So it's like, you just have to eat every hour and a half.
Oh my God.
I still do. I still have to eat every hour and a half, and you can't really eat more than like a fist's worth of food.
So it's just like small feedings multiple times.
Yeah. It's basically like you're hypoglycemic and almost diabetic, which you are. Your body is acting like it's pre-diabetic, or like it acts like that, which is separate from gestational diabetes, which is also a thing, but like that's separate.
How many months pregnant are you now?
Six.
Wow. You only have two more months and then you're going to have a child.
Well, no, there's four more months.
Oh,
because they count it weird. This is another thing that I didn't know. They count it from your last period. They don't count it from when you actually got knocked up.
So it's actually babies take 10 months to grow.
Yeah. What? Babies take 10 months. Yeah. It's 40 weeks usually. Mm-hmm. I mean, people do it, sometimes go into labor earlier than that, but yeah, it's 40 weeks. So I'm still in my second trimester. You enter your third trimester almost at 7 months, I think.
Wow, that's so exciting. And you know the sex of the baby.
I do. It's a girl.
And when could they tell you it was a girl?
So early, with a blood test.
Wow.
And it was so weird because I didn't cry when I found out I was pregnant at all. Like, I was very emotional and very excited and like going through it, but I didn't cry. Which also could have been the hormones, because I'm not a big crier, and I have been in the last like couple months. And then I found out and it was a girl, and it was so much more real. And I just was like crying. Yeah. And also, I always thought people were lying when they were like, I don't care as long as it's healthy. And I was like, okay, but you do, like, you care.
Yeah. And I think as well as women, I don't know, because I'm really close with my sisters. My brothers are great and stuff, but also now they're like teens and we don't really talk. And I talk so much more with my sisters about stuff. Yeah. And I don't know. I think I would probably want a girl as well.
I thought I would, but then in the moment, I really didn't care. I was like, I don't, which also partially could be because my husband was like a very quiet, very sweet, like boy. Just based on like pictures and stories, I was like, okay, if I was going to have a boy, I could handle him. Yes. I could handle a little.
Yeah. And with my boyfriend as well. He looked like he was very easygoing. So were my brothers as well. But there is something I really like about how with my sisters in their teenage years, but then that might be different when you're the mother. So I don't know. Yeah.
Wait, how many siblings do you have? I'm sorry. Everyone who listens probably already knows this, but
no, there's five of us all together.
Wow.
Yeah.
All same mom, same dad.
All four of them all same mom. I'm the only one with a different mother.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I don't speak to, and the listeners know this, I don't speak to my mother, but my stepmom's amazing. She's the best.
Oh, that's great. That's really good. Step parents are hard, or can be hard. It's a hard role.
Yeah. It can be hard for both. And I think we're really lucky because I don't know. I feel like with my dad, like I saw a lot when I was small of what he went through. So I never really had much resentment or anything for him like getting a divorce or I don't know, I kind of just got it. And then when I met my stepmother, she was really nice and he seemed really happy. And she did, like, when she first met me, she said something like, oh, I hope I'm not gonna be like, I hope you don't think I'll be like the evil step queen type of thing. And I was only six or seven, but she she said that I was like, ah, that's just TV.
That's so mature. That's so sweet.
And it was like nice to have their house and see like a different, you know, like healthy, what a healthy relationship is. And I think I model like a lot of my behavior in my relationship off of them. So it's really good. I'm really lucky. And like they would say even they're not perfect, but like I think they're pretty, you know, they have a really healthy relationship.
That's so good. That's really lovely. No, I mean, I think it is a hard role. It's a hard role to step into. It's also a hard relationship. Like, it's a complicated relationship. I think it probably helps that, you know, you have these siblings now that you're really close to.
Yeah. I'm
an only child. And so like after my mom divorced my stepdad, there just wasn't a lot like logistically holding us together. We also had a really complicated relationship. So it was like, it just sort of was too hard to kind of hold together. And I think it was for the best that it didn't, but I always appreciate like good step parents, you know. I'm like, yeah, like that's really.
Yeah, no, I'm really lucky. If anything happened with my dad and my stepmom, which it won't, but I would still call her once a week. I wouldn't, there'd be no reason to not stay in contact with her. But it might be easier too. Like, I don't know what happened with you and your stepdad. Well, I was going to say maybe because it might have been easier for my stepmom because I was a girl, but actually I don't know, because then you hear or you see like videos of people being like, oh my, you know, this is my stepdad, but he's been like my dad. Yeah. So I guess it really depends on the person and how much they're like willing, like with my stepmom, she was never, you know, she's very accepting and stuff like that and made an effort. So yeah, I kind of think it's on the adult's part as well.
Yeah.
To kind of come into that relationship.
For sure. But she, yeah, it sounds like she also, you know, really wanted to be a mom and was like creating a family. And so that's like, you guys are a unit, which I think is really good. It's weird. I don't know. Like my relationship with my parents is very, it's not different now that I'm pregnant. It's the same relationship, but there's so much weird pressure that I put on myself where I'm like, oh, I have to fix my relationship with my mom or my daughter won't like me. And I'm like, that's a weird superstition. Like, where did that come from?
Yeah. Also, you know, I'll have people sometimes because they just don't know or understand what went on with me and my mother. And what's really frustrating is people will very easily say like, you're not going to feel guilty if she dies and you don't have a relationship. Or what about when you have a kid? And it's so quick for them to say that instead of saying to my mother, why don't you get mental health or like help? Or why don't you, like, everybody who was involved in like what went on never like looked at her and said, actually, our focus should go into getting her like the help she needs, or, you know, or even suggesting it, let's say. So, but for me, when I have a kid, I never want my relationship with my mother to be, it would never be healthy unless she got mental help. And firstly, she's not making an effort. She's never once reached out to me, let's say, if it's not via her family member. And secondly, it wouldn't be a healthy relationship for my kid to see. So I'll never have regret in that regard, if that makes sense. So I think for you too, whatever, try and do whatever's best for you, because that will, don't ever feel guilty just because you're having a kid and you're like, oh, I want our relationship to be perfect. Cause it's just, it's not.
I know, because then, it's also, it is just that connection thing where I'm like, oh man, like she went through this, you know, like this happened to her. And here are like similarities and differences and things that I want to do differently, which, and then coming to a place of like, oh, I do want to do things very differently than she did, but I also am in such a different situation than she is that it just like, you know, the things that applied to her don't apply to me. And, you know, I always say that like, yes, my relationship with my parents is complicated, but I do think at the end of the day, they did the best they could with the cards they were dealt, which I think is not true for a lot of people. And I think was not true for their parents. Like, people do get weirdly judgmental when you don't speak to your parents. I know my mom didn't speak to her mom for a really long time because her mom wasn't making an effort, hadn't, you know, done anything to make the relationship reciprocal or even healthy or like good at all. And my mom had a lot of guilt about that. And it's like, you know, that it wouldn't, my mom had a lot going on. She didn't, there wasn't room in her life for, you know, what my grandmother needed and what my grandmother brought to the table.
And you understand that as well, which is great.
Yeah. Well, my grandmother was a lot. Her name was Morningstar. She sold and did a lot of acid, which normally I think makes people cool.
but as parents, maybe.
Yeah. Who was it? Yeah.
And I think anybody who criticizes it, it's usually because it's so, it's like, oh, that's so nice that that's so out of your understanding that your relationship with your parents is so great. Or they might be like, well, you know, my dad didn't come to a soccer game. And I'm like, yeah, it's obviously not because of that. Like, you just don't understand that. Yeah. And that's fine. I don't understand hard algebra. I don't even know how to say algebra, but I don't go going, oh, you should do algebra. You know, yeah. Like, it's okay yeah. to not understand other people's situations, but people like my dad always says, and it's like an old joke, opinions are like assholes, everybody has one. And yeah, so true.
Yeah. Everybody has one, and you should really only share it if people are into it.
Yeah, yeah, that's funny. I'll tell them that. I'm gonna put my mic down.
Yeah.
I'm gonna lean my mic.
Yeah. No, parents are hard. I don't know. And I do think a lot of my friends and a lot of people in my family is very weird. Everyone, in some ways, my family is very advanced because everyone has been getting divorces for generations. Like my grandmother was married 3 times officially. And then she had 2 like quote unquote marriages that were like ayahuasca bonding ceremonies, you know, like where it's like, okay, show me the paperwork. But they called each other husband and wife. And then my grandfather was married, I think four times and engaged 1 other time. And then my great grandparents were also divorced. Like, so yeah, there's a lot of like fractions and weirdness and no one knows who their dad is. Everyone finds out who their dad is when they're like 11. It's like a weird family tradition. My mom did, my grandmother did. My cousins all did. And I remember I was talking with my mom, I was like 30. And I was like, hey mom, isn't it great that we like avoided that weird Bennett family curse? Like I always knew who my dad was and there was never any doubt. Cause I looked just like him when I was a little kid, like exactly. And she was like, yeah, I was so relieved when you didn't come out with red hair. Cause that would have been a different story. And I was like, mom, no, it was supposed to be you and me, like you and me breaking family curses. It's like, yeah, I wasn't sure. It could have been another guy's. I was like, oh.
And is your father still around or?
Yeah, he's around. Yeah.
And you have a good relationship with him?
Yeah, we have a pretty good relationship. Yeah, I think we don't talk as much as he would like, but yeah, it's pretty good. You know, he putters around.
And you are breaking tradition though, because you definitely A, know who the father is, and you guys have been together for 10 years, right?
We've been married for 8 and then together for even longer. Yeah.
Are you monogamous?
We are. Yeah. We've opened up for brief periods. One of which got shut right up by COVID. But we are for the most part monogamous. We're monogamish. We're fully monogamous, but.
How did it feel opening it up though? Were you like, I know I would feel like insecure or jealous. How did you deal with those sort of feelings?
Honestly, I have never really experienced romantic jealousy until I was pregnant. And I don't know if it's a hormonal thing or like a trying to keep my like clan together or what. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just that my family's so weird or that like, I don't know, maybe because we'd been together for so long. I don't know where it came from, but I'd never experienced romantic jealousy. So I didn't mind. It was definitely something. I think if you're going to open a relationship, you should do it when the relationship is in a really good place and you're feeling really secure, because otherwise it's just going to suck for everyone. So we would do that. Like when we were for the short period, we were open. If ever either of us was just like feeling some type of way and we, you know, needed that person to be there, we needed each other in some way that we felt like we weren't getting, we would, you know, close it up and we wouldn't see other people. So it's just, it's like, I think open relationships are great. I think polyamory is great. It's so much work and it's so much talking. It's so much like scheduling that I just think people should be prepared for that, you know, like, and Yeah. And then, you know, and then it was COVID and we were just together all the time. And I think that was really make or break for a lot of couples. And it really, you know, we'd been together for so long. I don't want to say it made us, because we were already us, like we were already together, but it really, I don't know, really solidified and made us feel like even closer than we'd ever been. So, so that's actually been really nice. I know some people struggle, like if they are open and they close the relationship, it can be really hard because it's an adjustment. But for us, it was really nice.
Yeah. I also think as well, if you are, you know, Tom Cassidy was on last week and we talked about how we couldn't do open relationships. But I think I've been thinking about it since last week. And I think it's like you have to have a high sex drive as well. So never mind the fact that I would feel like, yeah, I would definitely feel jealous. And I would feel like worried or whatever. But it's more as well, I just don't have that high of a sex drive to be giving anybody else my body bar my partner.
Yeah. And I think the other thing with open relationships is a lot of times, like in traditional heterosexual relationships, it's the man who wants them and is like, I want this because I have a high sex drive and I think that this will help me meet that. And then they open up the relationship and it's much easier for women to get laid. And so the men often then find themselves like having to deal with the fact that, you know, they thought this was what they wanted. They thought this would meet their needs. They thought that, you know, they did have a higher sex drive, but then they find that like just the work to reward payoff is a little skewed and they're like, wait, now I'm just spending all this time trying to get laid.
Yeah. Like, oh no, that's exhausting.
It's exhausting. I know. And I think also, I don't know. I've known my husband since I was 11. We met in middle school. We didn't date right away. Obviously we were friends for a long time, but so I think that was also a factor because it was just a really solid foundation and base to always come back to. But that was also why, like, I've known him for so long, I could be really honest and just be like, look, I'm feeling really gay right now and I would love to have sex with a woman. And he'd be like, hell yeah, get on out there. Or like, I want to have a wide experience, a birth of experiences under my belt. Like I want to, you know, get out there and be a little freak. And he was like, heck yeah.
Hey, that's great. And it's great you can communicate that. And it's like, you know, there's no cheating or sneaking around. So the first sexual experience you had with a woman was while you were in a relationship?
Yes. Is that true? Yes. Yeah. It was in college. As always. It is crazy to me that it was in college, though, because where I grew up is such a gay friendly area. It's like kind of known in the gay community. I grew up near Northampton, Massachusetts. So it is crazy for me that it wasn't until I left that I was with a woman, because it's just like, they were around, you know, there were gay women around me. And I just never, I don't know. I never put it together until I went to college. And that was when I was like, oh, I think, you know, I couldn't like figure it out. I was like, am I gay? I don't think I'm gay because I still like having sex with men. But then I was like with a woman and I was like, oh no, I definitely am gay. Like, cause that was great. And it actually wasn't until I was on Top Model. And I remember this so clearly. I was talking to Jenna Doucette, who was on my cycle. And she was like, yeah, I'm bisexual. I've been with men and I've been with women. And obviously I'd heard the term bisexual before. Obviously I like knew it was a thing. But for some reason, it had just never clicked. And so I was like trying to be really chill because they were filming us. And I was like, oh, yeah, no, cool. Do you want to just like say everything that there is about that? Like, can you just talk about that for like a while? Can you just like explain that to me a lot? And she was just like, nah, all right, I don't know. And I was like, oh, my God, that's me.
Like, I love that. I think as well for a lot, like our age group anyway, like I remember growing up, people would be like, you're either straight or you're gay, and bisexual people are usually gay. And so there was like, I think the term is getting much more recognition than it did before.
Yeah. Bi or pansexual or whatever. I don't know. The labels are weird. Like, yeah. Cause I don't know. I have a whole bit about this, but I just, the... Yeah, I can't tell the difference between bi and pansexual. Like, I know I get the, intellectually, I get the distinctions, but it feels like they're the same thing.
Yeah, I think if I'm right, it's just the difference is that it's just an updated version of bisexual to include all the genders, I guess. Because maybe some people are bisexual, are like, oh, I just fancy men or women. And then this includes people who maybe I don't identify as that or are trans.
Yeah.
And I think so, but someone's probably going to message me and be like, never mind. Is it intelligence? Am I using the wrong term? Because now I'm thinking, is pan that you're attracted to intelligence, regardless?
No, that's I forget. I can't remember what that is because the first time I heard it, it made me really mad. that is a thing, but it's not pansexual. No, I can't believe I can't remember what that is now. Anyways, yeah.
I remember I don't want to say who, but like an older Irish farmer type person, we were all out and they were like, oh, and they said that word, you know, that like, yeah. Oh, I'm attracted to intelligence, you know, and they were like, yeah, my wife is really intelligent. And I had to be like, no, that means that you'd also be like attracted to men. And he was like, what? No, I thought that just means I like really intelligent women. I was like, how many people have you been telling? And I can't remember.
You're like, so your wife is not that, then, is what I'm hearing. Your wife loves a himbo, is what I'm getting from that.
Yeah. But yeah. And he thought he was being like so woke, this like older farmer guy.
That is a thing though, but now I can't remember. But yeah. But also love a himbo. I love
and
that.
And what's a himbo?
Oh, it's a male bimbo.
Oh,
a dumb man.
Yeah, me too.
Hello, dumb man.
Well, so you had just said America's Top Model. So America's Top Model, and that was like I remember seeing that at home as well on the TV. That's like a universal. And then you talk a lot about that being. You talk a lot about that on TikTok, where I learned a lot. Like, I didn't realize that reality show people don't get a lot of money unless you kind of blow up afterwards.
No, yeah, we didn't get paid at all. I know. We didn't get paid at all. And then, but we did get some money for food. And then we all would like try and save the money that we got for food. Like, we would try to spend less than they gave us on food. And then afterwards, they keep you for a while. Like, after you get eliminated, they keep you in a hotel and they stop giving you money for food. You still have to pay for your own food. So yeah, I went home so broke. That was the brokest year of my life, was after that show.
What is the benefit then of doing it? So you go home broke, but is it so that you could get like a modeling contract? Did that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so you can get, and I did. I mean, I will say, like, I'd never modeled before the show. I'd never really thought about modeling before the show, except for like very briefly in eighth grade. I was like, maybe I should get an eating disorder, and then it didn't stick. I consider myself very lucky, but it was never like a serious thing that I entertained. So in that way, it did introduce me to modeling. Like, I modeled for a long time, but it takes a while, you know, to like build up clients and a portfolio and like do all the things. Also, it didn't help that when I was on Top Model, they chopped off all my hair, which I loved and I thought it looked great. But then I went to all the agencies and they were like, come back in a year. Your hair's too short. I know. That was a bummer that I did not process at the time. Like, I was just like, okay.
And did you say as well that they critiqued you on your weight?
They did. Yeah. Although they did. And it was weird. I don't want to minimize how shitty it was, but it was so much just typical of the time. Like, nothing they said on the show was worse than anything people said in the industry afterwards when I went around to agencies and stuff. Like, the industry is built on young women's bodies, which I think is easier for us to wrap our head around, like, as an idea. We're like, yes, of course, modeling built on young women's bodies. But then when you break it down into what that means for an individual, that's when you kind of see how gross it is. It is fully grown adults, you know, well into their emotional maturity, looking down on these, like, you know, 16, 17, 18, 19 year old girls. And that's what it is. Like, that, nothing that happened on the show is outside of what happens in the industry. And I think, like, again, I don't want to minimize it. It was shitty. And I think a lot of the things that are coming to light now show how shitty the show was. But like, yeah, the whole industry is kind of flawed. It just, yeah.
How old were you when you did that?
18, 19.
Oh my God, you were a baby.
I know, oh, I was a baby, yeah.
I wouldn't have been able to mentally do that. I just, I need to comment on my looks at that age would have just been like, would have stuck with me forever.
Oh, it totally stuck with me. I mean, I'm still unsticking it. There are a lot of things that like, yeah, because it is, yeah, it's such an influential age. It was like, this is the other thing about being a teenage girl that's like very hard to explain to people who either somehow managed to escape their teenage years without, I'm talking about like a typical insecure teenage girl. Like anything good that you hear is just attention and you don't like categorize it. For me anyways, this was my experience. If somebody said something good, I was like, okay, good, but it doesn't stick. I'm not like, oh, okay, I'm going to internalize that and I'm going to like hear that and carry it with me. It was just like, okay, I hear that. And that like, you know, it was like a sugar rush, like good at like compliments were just like, you eat candy and then it's through your system in 5 seconds. If somebody says something bad about you, that it's not that it like, it's not that it's easier to hear. It's that it's confirming what you're already telling yourself all the time, right? If somebody says like, oh, you're too fat for that. You're like, oh no, I know. I have that's been playing in my head, you know, like.
No, it's completely. True. Yeah. I think as well, a lot of like, and maybe women are, you know, in any culture told to be modest and you kind of, especially Irish culture, it's like where someone is like, oh my God, you look great. And you're like, oh no, this whole thing, you know, and it might've cost you like, you know, €50 the day before or whatever. Like we very much are trained to like deflect compliments. So I think you are right. Then the opposite, we're not trained to like deflect negativity as much maybe.
Well, that's true. I never thought about that.
Yeah, my dad's pretty good with that stuff. He's always like, you know, like I remember like him being like, never take anything personal or whatever, which was very helpful. Mm. But I don't think a lot of people get that side of
it. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, I'm just writing that down because that's a really good point, and I'm working on a essay or an article right now that's about. Top model and body image and stuff. It's true. It's interesting. I mean, that's really good. I feel like that is a good lesson to teach kids to like not take it personally and also just not to care so much about how you look, but it's like, how do you teach that to kids when society is like, no, but that's all that matters. Like,
my dad was really strict about that stuff. I remember one time not wanting to go out in a swimsuit because and everybody else was outside in there and he just like shut me out of the house. Like, but actually, you know, it did help in hindsight because it's like his whole point was like, no one's looking at you, no one cares. And a lot of the time when people say things, we give them more power than actually the person who said it meant. And he was very much like you shouldn't be ashamed of your body. You shouldn't, you know. Yeah, yeah. Like, but he would do it in like don't be so silly.
Yeah. Well, that was his way. Very gruff, very Irish.
Fully. Yeah. That was his way of doing it as an older Irish man. But I think too, you know, what's so interesting that let's say you were saying at the time when you did it, there was a huge focus on women being skinny and being light as a feather and being bony and all of this stuff. And so it really made women who didn't look like that feel bad. And so now we're in this world where everybody's saying like thick is good and thick is great and have a big arse and all of that. And I think that's great. But then the opposite is you have those other bad people who before were saying, who were insulting women on their weight. They're now coming in on and insulting women on not having an arse or being too thin or... Yeah. So it's like so annoying because we get to this point where we're like, no, body positivity and we should be like that. But then it's like they still find a way to put the other bodies down. And that's like very frustrating because like if you have a big arse, great. Other people, that's impossible for them to have unless they're like going to wear padded yoga pants. So it's like,
yeah,
accepting all bodies.
I did on most of my photo shoots. Like, it's being a plus size model is so weird. And it's so weird to look back, because I look at footage of myself from the show and I'm so fucking thin. I'm so thin. And
yeah, when I saw that video where you were saying you're a plus size model, I was like, what? It didn't make any sense to me, because I was like, you're not plus size to me. You're like a size UK 10, which is like,
I know,
not plus size at all. And that's like an American 8 or something. That's
and now I'm much thicker than that, and I still don't have a fat ass. So, you know, there's really no win.
Yeah, my friend has a fat arse.
I have a little bit of ass thanks to pregnancy.
My friend has a fat arse, and it's amazing. And it looks, and it's funny because I sent her a video of a model, like a fitness model, and they were like showing how she had padded pants, and it was all kind of like they were showing the before and then the behind, and like, it wasn't like to insult her. I think she was in on it to be like, no, I don't have this. This isn't real. Yeah. This is impossible. Yeah. And I sent it to my friend and I was like, you've made this possible, because she works out every single day. Well, she's a bodybuilder model. So, and she was like, yeah, to get this arse, I'm like working out every day. She calorie counts, she eats protein stuff. And it's like, yeah, she was like, I wouldn't have this if I wasn't like, you know, and she, you know, that's the world that she's in. But like, for your average Josephine walking down the street, that's an impossible ask to and like my sister is a big arse, but that's because she was a rugby player, and I feel like her build is like
yeah
she's like, why are you talking about my arse? Sorry, sister.
No, I don't know. I love a big ass. Chanel at our show last night, she has a bit about how she went on a date with a guy with a big ass.
Love that bit. That's so
funny. I know. It's so, and it's so funny, because it's also him being like, it's because of my ass, isn't it? And her being like, no, yes.
Yeah. It's so funny, because she was like, afterwards, she was like, I think like a part of the joke is that it is just a joke. But when I first heard that joke, I'd seen this guy on TikTok with a massive arse. And I know that Chanel is in a relationship, but I was like,
maybe. Oh, not anymore. They broke up.
Oh, no. Oh, really?
I know. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I really get invested in happy couples that I see, me but too. You never know from the outside, or sometimes people just outgrow each other. She's amazing. Anyway, I saw this guy on TikTok and I was like, oh my God, did she go on a date with this big booty guy on TikTok? He has such a big arse.
Love to see it.
Yeah.
I love it on men and women and everything in between. I don't care. I love a bit. I think it is a grass is always greener thing, because I have a very flat ass, no matter how, like, I gain weight everywhere but my ass. So I'm like, yeah, love it. Also, man, fit modeling, I would never. It's like, fit modeling is I guess your friend is a fitness model, right?
So yeah, it's more, she does competitions, so she's not like a model agency or anything, but they do like these, I guess, I don't want to quote it wrong because it's not a beauty pageant, but they do wear dresses and like swimsuits to show off their muscles or glutes or
I think Murray Faustin's sister does that too. So I guess that's different. Fit modeling is when the designers use these models who are not like regular models to build their clothes around. And you have to be a very specific height, a very specific measurement, and you can't deviate from that at all. Like, it seems like it's so, like, you could be Calvin Klein's like size 8, and you have to be between like 5'6" and 5'8", I think, and like a true size 8. And like, if you're, when you're working with the designer, which can take like a long time, it can take like a couple of weeks. You can't eat any big meals. You can't like, 'cause you can't even deviate like a quarter of an inch. You have to be really, really careful.
I would be a great fit model, not just because, this feels like, okay, you don't need to do pictures. I would hate to do pictures, but I do think I would be a great fit model because the only time I ever fluctuated from my weight was when I moved to America and I was eating really bad food. But other than that, my IBS is bad enough that I cannot put on weight. And I've been trying to put on, never mind. I'd be a bad fit model because I actually lost weight recently. I forgot when I was at the doctor's. I was like thinking I've been the same size for years.
I was going to say my IBS definitely makes me fluctuate a lot because I don't know, you know, you have a day and you're like, well, I weigh less than I do because everything in my body is outside my body now.
Yeah, I feel like my IBS is pretty much like daily, but I don't know. I got to work on that. I got to like, it's my own fault. You know, where it's like, oh, I could have fixed this years ago. So that's why I feel like I was thinking, oh, it keeps me at the same weight. But actually now that I'm saying that out loud, sometimes I say things out loud and I'm like, no, that's completely wrong. What are you talking about? But
for some people, it might make you, you know, might mean that they stay the same. Just for me, it definitely means, although again, another thing, pregnancy impacts digestion a ton. For most people, it makes it worse. But for a lot of people who already had really bad digestion, it makes it a lot better. Wow. Like your body, like it starts holding on to good bacteria and bad bacteria. Like it's a lot easier to get like yeast infections and stuff when you're pregnant, but it also holds on to the good bacteria in your gut. So like my digestion has been so much better. Truly, like, and people keep asking, they're like, oh, is it rough? Is it really hard? And I'm like, no, it's never been better. It's a freaking dream.
Yeah. My stepmom said the happiest she was when she was pregnant 3 times and one was with twins, but she said like the flux of hormones made her feel really good and stuff.
It's been a mixed bag, but there have been positives.
She was pregnant for like 4 years or something.
I do not know. It's so weird because I think I do want to have more kids. I don't think I just want to have one. But now that I am this, I cannot imagine being pregnant and having a kid. Like, truly, that is heroic to me. I can't imagine. Like, because there's just been times where, like, I don't know, I've fallen asleep on the train because I'm so freaking tired. It's like, I had mono a couple of years ago, and it's like that. It's like that tired.
How are you finding still going out and doing shows being 6 months pregnant? When do you think is going to be like the cutoff where you're like, I have to take a bit of time off?
Well, I had to take a bit of time off in my first trimester because I had two things that like flared up. I had two like health things that sort of flared up and made it so I couldn't leave the apartment. I was like semi bedridden for a little while and it sucked. I like couldn't really walk for more than a block. And I was talking about this yesterday. This male comedian was like, oh, well, yeah, but you know, pregnancy must be like way harder now than it was when I saw you last. And I was like, no, actually it's not, but thank you. I know you're such an expert in pregnancy related matters. Cause it actually gets way easier. Everyone says the second trimester is way easier and way better. And that's definitely been true for me. So in the first trimester, I had to take some breaks and it stressed me out and I hated it. And I tried to be really chill and failed.
Well, if anything, the pandemic taught us is you can take a break and then you can come back to life. Because there's some comedians who like took the whole 2 years. Like I was definitely like out doing all the outdoor stuff and everything. But that's just, it was for my own mental health. But others needed to take the time off. They didn't do any Zooms or shows and they were back out like as if nothing had happened. It's not like they de-improved or whatever. They were still.
Yeah. And also not that far before quarantine, I had mono. And so I had to slow down a little bit then. So I think it was a more gradual, like slow, like the quarantine was a little bit more of a gradual slow down for me, which I think was really good. And then also right before my husband and I went to Hawaii for a comedy festival. So that was a very good, like, we didn't realize, we were like, yeah, let's just go on this trip. It'll be fine. And then when we were in quarantine, we're like, I'm so glad I went on that trip. We went on that trip. Remember when we were in Hawaii? Remember? And there were people and the beach, and that was so good. So like that sort of worked out because like, you know, in the fall I'd had mono and so I'd had to slow down. And then we had like some like big, nice, big sort of career highs. And then it was like, okay, now go into quarantine. Yeah. And then I did do the outdoor shows and stuff, which were, I don't know. I had one really good outdoor show.
Yeah, no, I loved them, but
really?
Yeah, only because it was so mental that it definitely, I feel like for me, I had a massive improvement in the pandemic because I would have like anxiety and stuff and like nervousness a lot. That doesn't really portray, like, I don't think people would notice it out of my personality. But I definitely have it, and I think with comedy that was one of my big things, was Yeah, anything that makes me nervous that I can do and get over really helps my comedy and helps my stage presence. So I feel like doing those shows where it was like there's a fucking helicopter, there's a dog running up to you. I once did a show and a dog just like came up on stage with me, and having to keep those people captivated. And so and then it just kept me sane as well, because it's really kind of, when I think about it, it's a bit, it's a bit sad that my happiness is actually quite dependent on comedy. Which
everyone's happiness is dependent on something.
Yeah, because I don't do drugs, and I'm not like super motivated really to do anything else like exercise or sports or anything. So it's really the only thing that I get adrenaline from, and it gives me the most happiness.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, which is really sad when I think about it.
Well, I don't think so though.
Or happy that I found the thing I love to do.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, if you found the thing, I think that's it. It did definitely, that is interesting, because now that I think about it, it did make me a better performer. Like I remember when I first started doing like the outdoor shows that were like at venues and not in parks, I was like, oh, I'm not as, I thought I would be so rusty because all I've been doing are these park shows. Like, and it wasn't at this nearly at the same volume that it was before, you know, like, cause before COVID I was going out every night. And so I was like, I'm going to be so rusty. All I've been doing is park shows like a couple times a week, you know? And then I did Zoom shows, but not a lot. Like I was not. So it was really nice to be like, oh, I'm not nearly as rusty as I thought I would be, because I think, yeah, having to shout in a park and just be like, okay, what is the funniest part of my jokes? Like, because you have to say as few words as possible because you are shouting over.
100%. And then you come back and it's like a real love for indoor comedy again and the stage. And it taught us, well, it taught me anyway, that we don't need to get up every night, and that actually you're funnier, I think, for me. If I prioritize certain gigs and not burn myself out, and who wants to be doing it 3 or 4 times? Like, yes, I'll do it on the weekend because I'll get more money, and that's like more a money thing than a, but if my goal is to be like a successful enough comedian that I'm just doing like 4 amazing gigs a week. Like I was on the West Coast and we did like the improv, Punchline, and then a Vineyard. So we did 4 shows, 1 a night. And the other one was in this like theater venue. So we did 1 a night and we did 15 to 20 minutes each. And then you just like lived your life during the day. And I was like, this is my comedy goals. I just want to be able to do.
Yeah. Like this is the level. Yeah. I definitely like during quarantine had like a lot of sort of thoughts and plans for how I wanted things to be different afterwards. And I did also then have a little bit of like an adjustment period and a shock where I had to come to terms with the fact that I had made changes, and that meant things were different. Like, because I was like, okay, I don't want to be going out to multiple shows a night. I don't want to be doing the hang, like just hanging out at shows that I don't like with people that I don't like. I'm not going to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. So I stopped, and then that had an impact on the number of shows I was doing. And I had to deal with like the anxiety right then, because I was still the same person. I still had all the same anxieties of like, oh, I'm not doing enough. I'm not doing enough. I'm not doing enough. And that, right. Like I had to like adjust to be like, oh, okay. I made a change on purpose. I did this on purpose. Like I had to kind of soothe myself. And I think that happened to a lot of people Like a lot of people were like, I'm going to make changes in whatever capacity, whether it was professional or personal or like whatever it was. We made resolutions in quarantine that then
COVID
had to like deal with the effects of, you know. We were like, oh shit, my life is different now. And that takes some adjustment. Even if like, I consider myself so lucky. I really had the best possible like quarantine and COVID experience. I was so sheltered in so many ways. And so lucky, but it still has an impact, you know, and having to like, just adjust and make room for that.
No, of course. And I think you're right. Everybody, not even comedians, have had to kind of reevaluate a lot. This is a total like side road, but I just want to ask you, you said at the start of this before we recorded, you work for a company called a nonprofit, is it called Abortion AF?
Abortion AF. So it's Abortion Access Front, but Abortion AF for short. We used to be called Lady Parts Justice. and started by Liz Winstead, who is the co-creator of The Daily Show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she was the co-creator and head writer when The Daily Show first began with Craig Kilborn. And now she heads up this nonprofit, and we raise awareness about abortion rights and also provide on the ground support to independent abortion clinics, which just means abortion clinics that aren't Planned Parenthood. Not that we don't like Planned Parenthood. They just don't really need our support.
No, of course. And what is exactly, because from what I know, what's going on in America, you hear, you know, they're trying to, in certain states, say that a doctor will get a punishment now if he gives an abortion, or a woman can go to jail if she aborts her baby.
Yeah. So there have been a lot of,
I should say fetus as well, not baby. Sorry.
Yeah. Fetus. But yeah, I mean, it's, we say fetus, but it's also, it's what, you know, there have been a lot of scary laws that have been coming down the pike for a long time, but they've escalated recently. And I think a lot of people became aware of them with the Texas law, which did introduce a new component. So Texas passed a law that outlawed abortion after, I hope I get this right, it'll be embarrassing if I don't, 16 weeks. And they also passed a law that made it so any Texas citizen could sue any other Texas citizen for getting an abortion, for helping a pregnant person get an abortion, or for performing an abortion. They could sue.
So it's a massive element of fear.
Yeah. So yeah, it just made it all very scary. And the other thing is that, you know, they, like I said earlier, like they count pregnancy from the date of your last period. So when I say 16 weeks pregnant, that's actually 14 weeks pregnant. That's actually 14 weeks after conception, which is actually only 12 weeks after your first missed period. So it's really just like, when you hear these numbers, it's so easy to be like, okay, what does that mean? Like, what does 16 weeks pregnant mean? It means you're barely pregnant is what it means. Like,
I think that is the, let me just Google it, because I think mm-hmm. in Ireland, we passed abortion, but I think it's only until 16 week. How long?
Oh, is it? 16 weeks is a pretty common cutoff in a lot of states.
And so,
they tried to pass it for 12 weeks or 8 weeks. I don't know. They mess around a lot, so it's sort of hard to keep it straight.
12 weeks in Ireland. You can have an abortion up to 12 weeks of pregnancy. That is no more than 84 days since the first day of your last period. After 12 weeks, it's only if it's an exceptional. So what is, so that's 3 months, basically.
It's 3 months, but it's really 2.5. It's like 1.5 missed period is what it is.
So you got to be on the fucking ball.
Really have to be on the ball tracking your cycle. And the other thing is,
oh wait, in Texas, abortion is illegal once there's a fetal heartbeat.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So that's pretty much as early as 6 weeks. Sure, you wouldn't even know you're pregnant.
The fetal heartbeat, the other thing about a fetal heartbeat is that it's not a heart. It's not a heart that's beating. It's really messed up. It's an electrical impulse that actually comes from the mother's or the pregnant person's body. And I could go on forever, but the Texas law sucked, and it did introduce this new element of like vigilante abortion justice, which is like suing people who break their insane law. And it is catching on. Oklahoma just passed one. Florida tried to pass one, and I can't remember if it went through. And I think that's bullshit, and I think it's super scary, but I also think that it's sort of stealing some attention and some spotlights from some other laws that to me personally are even more scary, because the suing thing is so hard to enforce. It's so hard to make it happen. And there's so many people that are so worked up over it that I kind of don't feel like that's going to stick. What I'm worried about are places like Missouri that just passed a law saying that they're going to investigate miscarriages.
Jesus.
So that to me is really scary, because that just is such a slippery slope of like, if you are investigating someone for a miscarriage, if someone didn't know they were pregnant and did drugs or drank alcohol, right? Like, you know, or engaged in any behavior that was considered by someone who can't get pregnant to be quote unquote risky, someone who doesn't understand what it's like to live in a body with a uterus and who doesn't understand what it's like to be pregnant. Like, that to me is so much scarier. And that's the kind of thing that's just slipping it into other laws. They're not, you know, it's not getting the like national press that like the Texas law did. So there's laws that are being passed all over the country that are really scary, and that are really going to have like are going to put innocent women in jail and in poverty and keep them pregnant when they don't want to be. And like, as someone who's 6 months pregnant and super happy about it, I cannot imagine having to do this if you didn't want to do it.
100%. Like it's, I watched something where they were saying like women in these areas, especially young women, because they have no access to Plan B.
Yeah.
Or the pill, or any form of birth control, that they will use a hanger on themselves. Like that's a real thing.
Yeah.
That is terrifying.
Or they'll take, even if you take like herbal abortions, you know, like if you take mugwort or there's a lot of herbs that cause an abortion, they can also cause a lot of bleeding and they can also cause a lot of like internal distress and they can be really dangerous. They can raise your heartbeat. A lot of herbs that cause abortions do so by basically like putting your system into shock. And if you're not really careful with that, you can get really sick. And the other thing is that Missouri just tried to make it illegal to perform an abortion when someone has an ectopic pregnancy. And an ectopic pregnancy is when the fetus implants outside of the uterus. And the only option, the only medical treatment, the only possible medical treatment to save the mother is an abortion. There is no way for that fetus to be viable. That fetus is not even a fetus. It doesn't count as a fetus because a fetus is only a fetus when it's in the uterus. So a lot of anti-abortion people get upset when we say cluster of cells, but that's a literal cluster of cells because it can't be anything else. There's no medical universe where that's going to do anything but kill the mother.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of stuff that is just, it's just, it feels malicious to me. It feels woefully ignorant and malicious.
And women hating, you're going to choose again a cluster of cells over a lived human life. Also as well, I think it's really important for anybody to listen to this podcast who is not based in America and who is like, I did not realize until I was in Las Vegas driving down to the Grand Canyon, like how poor some of these areas are in America. And I think as well, like with America, a lot of people will say things like about Americans or whatever, but when you look at these people are living in insanely poor. They don't have the money to fly to New York to have an abortion. They don't have the money to move out of there. A lot of them probably don't even have the money for like good dental care or like health insurance. Like it's I didn't realize how insanely poor. Or even the school systems. I went on a date with a guy who was from the South and he said that he was told that the dinosaur bones were chicken bones and he learned this in school. So this is like insane to me. So like, of course there's like a disconnect with what's going on there. So anyway, for these women, it's like you're taking away any option.
Yeah. When we were in, when we were in West Virginia on one of our last tours, Abortion AF used to go on tour. We used to put on comedy shows and then we would also volunteer at the indie clinic and connect local activists with the clinic and sort of, try and highlight to our audiences like, hey, this is ways that you can help out your local abortion clinic. So this was obviously pre-COVID, but we were doing some work at the last abortion clinic in West Virginia. It's in the Capitol, which is called Charleston, which always threw me off because that's also a city in South Carolina. But so we were in Charleston and we were at the clinic and we were talking to the social worker there who does, she is the social worker at an abortion clinic, but she basically helps people who actually decide to have the baby. Yeah. And she like right after birth, like before pre and postnatal, basically social work care. And she was saying that most of her clients don't have a car. So they live in rural West Virginia. There is no public transportation. And they don't have a car. And so even something like running out of diapers is an emergency because to get to somewhere where there are diapers. And so she was just tired. She was just so drained and so tired because the work that she had to do. And she also, got money from the government to try and help pregnant women with dental care because the dental care in West Virginia, even that is available for people who have the money, is so scarce and so rare and so hard to get to that dental health is like a real emergency within the state. So any medical clinic that provides any sort of like help or counseling or help with dental care gets a lot of money. And pregnancy messes with your teeth, because if you don't get enough calcium, the baby will leach from your teeth.
Jesus.
So yeah, it's really messed up. And so she had all these people, you know, who were pregnant and didn't want to be, but weren't able to get an abortion in time. And so now they were her clients, and she was trying to help them through the pregnancy and trying to help them navigate either having the baby or giving it up for adoption. And their teeth were falling out of their head.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
It is like, this is like horror movie stuff.
It really is. And we met with some politicians there who were passing laws to make these people's lives harder. And I was like, how can you pretend to care? Like, yeah. How do you do that? And yeah,
it's a real like, that's where what?
Oh, that's also where Joe Manchin is from. That's where he represents. So.
Oh, and I don't even know who he is.
Oh, he sucks. He claims to be a Democrat and he blows monkey chunks.
It's like showing that they have a real lack of empathy because they can't, or just think that women aren't as important, because it's like,
yeah,
they're treating them like they're animals to a certain extent. Also as well, I don't know if someone has a joke about this, because I remember hearing it on stage somewhere, but I don't know who it is to quote it, but it was something like how in these same states you're legally allowed to have a gun and shoot someone on your property. But there was something like, okay, I can't remember, I don't know if you know this person who did this joke, but it was like, okay, I'll have the baby and then I'll just like shoot it on my property. Yeah, it's an intruder.
Yeah, it's an intruder. Yeah, that's, you know, she's an intruder on my property right now.
Yeah. It's absolutely. Yeah. And then like the Sarah Silverman joke where it's like, okay, well then all men need to stop wanking because, you know, the sperm is alive.
Sperm can smell.
Oh my God. That's gross. That's gross. I'll think of that next time it touches me. Wow. Are you smelling my skin?
It is because it's trying to like find its way.
It's like, we're lost here. Why am I on her lower back?
Yeah. Why am I in a mouth? That doesn't feel right. Yeah.
Oh no.
No. R.I.P. Pour one out.
Before we finish, there was another question I wanted to So I wrote here because there was another question I wanted to ask you. I think it was just So is there any things you wish you had known before you got pregnant? Like any advice to anybody who is going to get pregnant?
Yes. Well, first of all, anything that happens to you is going to feel let me back up. Okay. Yes. I have two things that I wish I'd known before I was pregnant. You're going to get more advice than you've ever gotten in your life. Everyone is suddenly going to have an opinion on you and your life choices and all of the things you put in your mouth. So pick two people that you trust to ask for advice. And then you can just take everything else with a grain of salt. Cause it's so overwhelming. People are like, don't drink coffee. Don't do this. Don't do this. Don't do that. Don't do that. And so like, and you're also reading books and you're also reading articles and you're also Googling things. Like there's just so much information pouring in that if you can like pick two or three streams of it that you trust, then the rest can just be useful or not as it comes in. And then the other thing that I wish I'd known is anything that you're dealing with before you're pregnant is gonna get amplified by the pregnancy. So I had like a hip injury that was like sort of annoying. And it became debilitating. Oh, no. And it was like a huge problem. And I really had to deal with it and like go to a bunch of physical therapy and stuff. And then like I had fibroids that were like sort of annoying and they were like debilitating and super painful. And like I had to, which doesn't mean that you should just like totally be ready and you should be in the prime of your life and everything should be perfect, but just like, you know, be ready to, just deal with anything that you're dealing with. Times two. Also have a good exercise routine.
Okay.
Because exercising during pregnancy is really important. And also you will have to stop for weeks at a time. And so it's a lot easier to pick back up if you have like a set routine that you can go to and trust.
My stepmother swam a lot during her pregnancy.
Swimming is the best. It is the best, because it weighs a lot. Your stomach, like, weight, you know, it's like an extra, you know, right now it's like an extra 2 pounds of pressure all the time, which isn't that much, but it's like, oh, swimming rules. That's why I've been on vacation a lot. I was like, we got to go somewhere with a pool. I don't care where it is. It's been friggin' amazing. Yeah. Swimming is awesome. And yeah, definitely recommend that. But yeah, I think those were the biggest things, is like, just any, you know, it's a big change for your body. It's also like, just be ready for things that felt like a huge deal beforehand to suddenly feel like nothing. Like the vomit thing, I have a legit phobia. Like, I really, it's like a, but
makes me cry.
Yeah. Oh, I'm a mess. It's like, also crying. I used to be really weird about crying. I would get a terrible headache. I would like, I felt, I always used to joke that I was allergic to it. Like, I would get a sinus headache for days. I would like be stressed and anxious, and I'd be like, oh my God, like someone saw me cry. It just happens now.
Yeah. I cry a lot anyway. I don't know. Ever since dating my boyfriend, I cry a lot more. Not because he doesn't do anything. I just don't know. I don't know why.
No, you're just, it's probably just that you feel safe enough and you're processing some shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think is good.
You made me tea.
Yeah. It's a lot of that. My husband made me breakfast in bed on vacation and just cried. Yeah,
I would cry too. It's just so nice.
It's nice.
To be treated well. Well, thank you.
He makes you tea.
Oh yeah. He does it every morning. He texts me as well. Like when we're apart, he'll always text me like a good morning text, and he didn't do it today. And I was like, no good morning text. So is this where it ends? And he was like, no, I just got to play. I was like, okay.
And you were like, okay. Suspicious. With whom?
Where can people follow you?
They can follow me on all the platforms. It's just my name, Sarah B. Hartshorn, S-A-R-A-H, B as in boy, Hartshorn, H-A-R-T-S-H-O-R-N-E. Yeah, follow me on TikTok if you like top model and boob talk.
Yeah.
And follow me on Twitter if you like deranged thoughts. And Instagram if you like pictures. I don't know, follow me on all the things.
And you have a great story now on TikTok about your husband getting weed on. So everybody should go watch that. It's so funny.
Which people were upset about. People had some feelings.
I mean, it is very, I get that the girl peed on him by accident. That is like a drunk thing that guys do a lot. So it's nice that she's like breaking the glass ceiling. And yeah, but what I don't get is why she hit you. I'm still kind of confused. She must have been like sleepwalking.
She was sleepwalking, and she thought I had walked in on her in the bathroom. So she was trying to, which makes sense because it was kind of an open mouth pawing, but she.
Oh, she was trying to close the door.
Yeah, but there was no door. There was just my face.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. Like Leland sleepwalks, so he's done a bunch of shit that I'm like, he like argues with me in his sleep, but he would never argue in the day.
That's creepy.
I know. He was so funny when we were in San Francisco. I actually forgot because I talk on my Patreon all about like my private life, and I should have said this on the Patreon, but I forgot. I was too busy giving out about stuff. But he sleepwalked, and he ran to the door. And he got up and he screamed Jesus. So he must have thought he was late for something. So that's what woke me up. And when I woke up, he was running at the door. But then he was like a Sim, you know, where he's just like, and then he went to the bathroom and he was just like a Sim again, like up against the door. And then he went to the wall and he was just up against the door. And it was so funny because like
Blair Witch, I don't like it.
I was like, Leland, you're sleepwalking, come to bed. And he was like, I'm not sleepwalking. And I was like, you're sleepwalking. And he was like, I'm not sleepwalking. And then at this stage, he's just walking up and back against the wall, like again, like a PlayStation character. And I was like, okay, well, Leland, then what are you doing? And then he goes, sleepwalking things. It was so funny.
Well, at least the talking helps a lot. Like that makes, I don't know why. Sleep talking doesn't freak, probably because I do it. I do sleep talk. Yeah. But the walking, I don't know, it always creeps me out.
Yeah. Like, well, I know. And like, it's fine. I've gotten really used to it. And it's like, he's so great with everything else. It's like, I'll take this. Yeah. I'm like, thank God he does something. Thank God he does something. Or else I would be like, he's cheating, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, he's not, because you know that, like, yeah, he'd, if any female comedian gets a bit about their like side piece sleepwalking, you'd be like, aha. But
no, like, yeah, he doesn't have, I said this, it was so funny. There was this comedian said that, he believes only 20% of men don't cheat, which I don't agree with. I think maybe he just cheats a lot and is trying to justify But I was like, I would never be afraid of my boyfriend cheating. And he was like, why? And I was like, I don't know. He's like way too introverted to cheat. And then I said it to Leland later and he was like, that's not why I wouldn't cheat. It's not because I'm shy. And I was like,
That's so sweet. That's very tender. I love that. That's not why I wouldn't cheat. That's just also why I wouldn't cheat.
Yeah. I'm like, well, it's why I feel comfortable that you're not cheating. He's not very sociable. He's like sociable, but he's also like, I don't know. I just can't see him like putting in the effort to talk to another girl and be like, it's not him.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. I think he's one of those people who's a lot like I feel this way as well. Like, I think I can be like social and talkative and stuff, but it takes a lot out of me. And then I have to go retreat and be by myself.
Well, thank you so much. I better let you go and have a great meeting.
Thank you.
This will be out next week. I'll tag you and everything.
Yeah.
Thanks again.
Okay. Bye. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.